Good afternoon and welcome to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, joined today by co-host and legal expert, Senior Judge Elaine Andrews. Alaskans go to the polls on November 6th to do many things, elect a governor and many state legislators, weigh in on a ballot initiative. They also have judges to vote on, 15 of them who are up for a retention election, meaning voters decide if a judge continues on to another term of office. The goal of today's show is to offer useful information to voters on how to evaluate a judge showing up on their election ballot. To do this, we'll talk about how Alaska chooses its judges, as established in our state constitution. We'll talk about how they are evaluated for selection and reevaluated on whether they are recommended to be retained or not on the ballot. The final decision rests with voters. Here to unpack this important look at Alaska's judicial selection and retention process are my co-host and Senior Judge Elaine Andrews, and Susan DiPietro, the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council. Before we get started, I want to remind our viewers that we have valuable links on today's topic on our website. The Hometown Alaska webpage can lead you to helpful tools to understand how Alaska judges are evaluated, as well as the current evaluations of the 15 judges up for retention in this November election. We are simply linking you to the Alaska Judicial Council's website. These are all pages that they have created. One more note, today's show is pre-recorded to accommodate the host's scheduling, so we won't be taking calls during the program. We'll follow up on emails to hometown@alaskapublic.org before our next Justice Alaska program in mid-November. So welcome to you both. Let's get started. And Judge Andrews, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes. Today in the studio, we have Suzanne DiPietro. She has been the executive director of the Alaska Judicial Council for about the last 6 years, and a very busy director at that, since we have had such a large number of, a large amount of turnover in the judiciary and an enormous number of judges appointed during her term as executive director. And welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And before we go too much further, I just want to say we are recording this in September, the sort of the last week in September, in preparation to air it just before the November election. Our normal day in October would be October 15th. So we selected this topic in August without knowing that, for example, there'd be this enormous public debate about Judge Kavanaugh and his Supreme Court selection. It's ongoing right now. By the time our show airs, maybe it will be settled. We have no idea. And in addition, Anchorage has a court case that's been settled, but drawn a lot of news attention and headlines and opinionating. And I just want to be clear that today's show is really not about talking about Judge Kavanaugh or evaluating that process, or talking about a local court case. We just aren't able to do that. What we're here to do is, because we do have judicial retention elections, we want voters to know how to get engaged, where to find information, and to understand how the process works. So that's really what today's show is about, the selection of our judges and our retention elections.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, for clarifying that. I think it'll be interesting for those of us in the studio to listen into the pre-recording when it is actually aired in
October,
in mid-October, and of course we selected this topic in advance because it would be the last program before the election, and I think because it provides a valuable education on the structure of Alaska's selection and retention process, we're going to proceed and hopefully provide some education to the public about how things are done here in Alaska.
And it's complicated. Yeah. I mean, it's been an education for me just learning all about it. It goes all the way back to the Constitution.
So, Suzanne, you're a person who's probably one of the most knowledgeable people about the process and actively involved in it. Can you tell us a little bit about, in a very general way, how Alaska selects its judges
Sure thing, and I'm glad that Kathleen mentioned the Constitution because that's the most important part. So when the Constitutional Convention delegates went to Fairbanks right before statehood and started debating what should be in our Constitution, one of the key things that they had to decide in Article 4 of the Constitution was how will Alaska select its judges. And at the time, there were no, obviously, judges, state court judges, because there was no Alaska was not yet a state. But there were a number of delegates there who had experience with other other ways of selecting judges, for example, elections, and they were pretty clear that they did not want partisan politics to enter into the process. And that is how they started looking at the what's called the merit selection system or the Missouri plan. They wanted something that was proven to work, and it had been working in Missouri and other states at the time. And they wanted something that would be based on merit and qualifications. And yet they also thought that the governor, who is the statewide elected official in Alaska, should have a role, but only after the merit of the candidates had been selected. So that is how we came up with our current process, which is sort of a two-step process. It begins with an objective, nonpartisan evaluation of the merits or qualities of people who apply to be a judge. And then the Judicial Council, which we'll talk a little bit about the council members, I hope, but I can just say that they are a dedicated and hardworking group of volunteer citizens. The Judicial Council screens the applicants and nominates the most qualified, at least two names, to the governor. And then the governor, and that is without regard to political affiliation, and then the governor can make his appointment from among the names that the council has sent.
And is the governor bound to select from those, or can he say, I don't like those people that you sent to me, give me some other people, or there's someone that I had my eye on all this time and I think they'd make a fabulous judge, so thanks for your recommendation, but I have somebody else in mind. Can that happen?
So the delegates, really, they talked about that, and they were very clear in the way the system works in Alaska and in other merit selection states that no, the governor is constrained. He must choose from the list of applicants that the Judicial Council has sent, but that is the reason why the council must send at least two, so that the governor does have a choice. And then the idea is he must select from the council's list, but he and the people on the council's list have already been sort of pre-qualified, if you will. And so he can use whatever criteria he believes are important as a statewide elected official in choosing from those names on the council's list.
And does he have a timeline? I mean, can he sit and just wait out, simply do nothing?
Well, that's actually, the timeline is another great thing about the merit selection process in Alaska, and the timelines are mostly set by statute, but the council has statutory deadlines within which it must act to screen and nominate people for judicial vacancies. And then once the council has, so the council must act quickly and is not really allowed to wait. And then after the council takes its actions, and the governor has 45 days within which to make his decision.
So in your experience, if there's a judicial vacancy, about how long does it take to get that vacancy filled? If a judge is going to retire, say, on January 1st, I mean, what would the public expect? How long would that vacancy remain open until a new person comes in?
Well, because of the detailed and thorough nature of the Judicial Council's process, it does take a little bit of time. So the council likes to have at least 5 weeks of an application period. In other words, announcing the vacancy and having at least 5 weeks for people to apply. It's a very big decision to think about applying to become a judge. And then the council has investigations that it does of all the applicants once they've put their names in. And so that takes some time. And all together, it can be 6 to 8 months of time between the very beginning when the council says, hey, there's a vacancy, please apply, and the meeting when the council votes in open session on its nominees.
So for a person who wants to be a judge, what does it look like from the applicant's point of view? In other words, they find out there's a vacancy on a court somewhere in the state of Alaska, and they think, that looks interesting to me, I want to apply. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through a little bit what a potential judge would have to do to find themselves eligible for appointment?
Sure. So a person who wants to apply has to take that first step of filling out the application. And the application is around 26 pages long. So I always warn potential applicants not to start at the last minute because...
Not the night before.
No, really, it cannot happen. They need to take some time. I mean, the council is interested in all aspects of the person's career. And so first they fill out the application, and then as soon as they fill out the application and the application period has closed, the council sends out an electronic survey to all members of the Alaska Bar Association. And these are people who would have had direct professional experience with the applicant. And so in this bar survey, all the attorneys who know this applicant, who've worked for or against this applicant, and also all judges who may have had this applicant in their courtroom, are asked to give the council their observations about the person's performance. So how was their legal ability? Did they have a good grasp of the law in the case? How was their temperament? Were they even-tempered and respectful, or were they hot-headed? How is their integrity? What do people think about their fairness? Because even in a litigation context, there is a sense of fair play, and people who litigate against somebody or judges who have an attorney in their courtroom can get an idea of that person's ability to be fair. So there are a number of qualities. And so we like to give all the attorneys in the state who know the people, the applicants, lots of time to fill out that survey. And then we sort of calculate all the scores that they've gotten, and we make that public. So that's a public document.
So it's up on your website, right?
It's up on the website. We post it on. We don't leave it there forever, but we post it there during the vacancy. And in the meantime, the council is sending letters of inquiry to dozens and dozens of people who have specifically a lot of experience with these applicants. And these are people who can give professional references, people actually who can give general character references, who may not be attorneys but can say, well, this person is really a great person. They volunteer at the PTA or what you may have. And then also the council sends out questionnaires to attorneys and judges who've worked very recently with the applicant on particularly important cases in the applicant's career, and who might have even more detailed information about their performance. So we get that information from them. The staff is busily compiling all this information and reminding people to send in their letters, and that takes some time. And then the council members have a meeting. They travel to the location where the judge will sit. And extremely important part of the process is to have a public hearing there so that members of the community can tell the council either what they think about some of the applicants that they may know, or, you know, what specific qualities they would like to see in their local judge. And this is really super important information for the council members. And then the council members have an extended interview with each of the applicants. And then at the end of that, they come out into public session and they have a public vote on each of the applicants, and then those names are sent to the governor.
Hmm. It's a pretty robust and open process.
You know,
intimidating a bit.
It's extremely intimidating for people, and I like talking to people who've been through the process, even ones who haven't been nominated. Most of them, not all, but most of them would agree it was a very hard process, but they learned a lot, and they really come away with a good feeling about how it worked. And the transparency is very important to the council also. So the council is striving always to make as much information available to the public as it can.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I noticed, I didn't mean to interrupt, there are things that you evaluate them on, and I don't have it in front of me, but there's like 7 or 8 things. And it's not just that they have a great legal mind. Mm-hmm. And could you talk a little bit about some of those things that you evaluate?
That's right. Legal ability is important. Temperament is important. Fairness, integrity, and honesty. But also, do they have a demonstrated history of public service or a willingness and enthusiasm for public service? Because being a judge is, you know, on an important level, public service. And also, Do they have community involvement? Do they have life experiences that will help them have good judgment in all the different decisions that they have to make in all the different kinds of cases and contexts, that they may be presented with legal issues that they have never seen before, but do they have that life experience that has contributed to good judgment and the ability to really understand, you know, what's before them in the courtroom?
Mm-hmm. I imagine that you want judges that look like the people that come before them. So diversity is a big, I mean, we have a very, very diverse community. Do you get the diverse applicants that you would like, or is that a process that is ongoing?
So it's interesting. So to be a judge, you do have to be a lawyer and a member of the Alaska Bar Association at the time you're appointed and a resident of Alaska. So our Alaska Bar Association, although it's changing, I think, a little bit in more recent times, has not been particularly diverse. And so that is the pool, really, of potential applicants that the council has to work with. But the most important thing is merit, and the council just encourages so much, you know, attorneys to put their names in. And actually, in the council's bylaws, council members are encouraged to, you know, encourage likely candidates to apply, because it is intimidating. It can be daunting, and perhaps with people maybe who haven't been traditional members of the Bar Association, they might not, you know, they might need a little bit of encouragement. And the council also does continuing legal education presentations, sort of here's how you apply to be a judge. So we also like to do some training on that for anyone who's interested, and we get great turnout at those, very diverse turnout at those sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and we're talking about the council members as the people who vet these applicants, and I know I've seen the binders that sit in front of each council member for each applicant, and on some of these vacancies there might be as many as 15 or 20 applicants. So it's truly astounding, the amount of information and work, and the council members are asked to wade through all of that information. And can you tell us a little something about the council and how it's made up, and what kind of people are coming together to vet these applicants?
So I'm so glad you asked about the council members, because the service that they do to the state of Alaska is really sort of underappreciated, I think. So the council has seven members, and I'll talk about the different categories of members. And this is, again, by the Constitution. So this is what the founders were looking for. First, the council has three people on it who are attorneys. These attorneys have to be from around the state, and they are elected by members of the Alaska Bar Association. So they're chosen by their colleagues as people who will have the right approach to find the people who will be the best judges. And they are all volunteers, so there is no stipend or payment associated with this service. And then they're appointed by the Board of Governors to the council. And then we have three people who are not attorneys, and they also are from different areas of the state. And they are appointed by the governor with confirmation by the legislature. So we have really a number of different branches involved in that. And then the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court sits as the chair of the council, and he does not normally vote unless there's a tie, but he is the ex officio member.
All right. Well, we have to take a tiny break here. So you're listening to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Just a reminder to our listeners, today's program is pre-recorded. To accommodate my schedule, I'm going to be away in October, but knowing we had an election coming up in November, co-host Judge Elaine Andrews and I decided it would be a great idea to pre-record a show on the judicial selection process and the retention election process. So that's what we're doing here today. So we're not able to take your calls. If we get emails from you, we'll perhaps touch on this topic again when we are back in November with our next Justice Alaska show. So back to the topic at hand, we were kind of laying the groundwork for how Alaska selects its judges. And what stuns me when I did the, I went to your website, Alaska Judicial Council's website. It's very extensive, has helpful FAQs on selection and also on retention, and also tons of information about, for example, this election in November, 15 judges are up for retention. I was able to read how various people in the community evaluated them. So in this segment, I think we're going to talk a little bit about the selection, who weighs in on the selection process, and then the second part, the retention. This is where voters weigh in, and who provides evaluation of these candidates so that voters have something to go by.
And maybe before we slide into that topic, I think, one of the things that I think is paramount about the system that Alaska uses is an attempt to a large extent to try and take politics out of the system. And one of the things that I think is sort of a genius idea by our constitutional scholars is that the three non-lawyers who are selected by the governor serve for longer than the governor's term. So, for example, this governor may only have appointed one person on the judicial council. I mean, they're six-year terms, so they are not necessarily
They're staggered 6-year terms. So and the founders, actually, there are discussions of that in the Constitutional Convention minutes, which, well, by the way, really, people should read those.
They're on your website. Right?
I'm so impressed every time I read them about how intelligent and thoughtful the founders were. So they talked about that, and they wanted to be sure that one governor could not, quote unquote, pack the judicial council with his nominees, and that was also in their thinking, the purpose of having some legislative confirmation in there as well.
Okay, and yeah, I mean, I think that's a sort of interesting and mm-hmm. critical piece, and then the lawyers are elected, so to speak, but it's the Board of Governors who appoints, and the Board of Governors has citizen members, so it's not purely a lawyer-related situation. And then the other thing I just wanted to follow up with, when we talk about, for example, the 15 judges who are up for retention, we have an awful lot of listeners who may be new to Alaska or haven't been here all that long, and it's always amazing that people think, you're filling out a form and it says, what county do you live in? And Alaska, as we know, has no counties, but it does have judicial districts. So the judicial retention of 15 judges, I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Not everyone gets to vote on all 15 judges. Is that correct?
That's right. So for the trial court judges, they are sort of divided by judicial district. So in the third judicial district, where we have Anchorage and sort of think of it as maybe South Central, there will be nine judges on the ballot, and then the other judges are in the first and the fourth judicial districts, which the first district is kind of generally like Southeast, and the fourth is sort of like Interior.
So of the 15, depending on where you live, you may have anywhere from one or two to nine,
exactly.
Depending. And you would find the information about those judges in your voter pamphlet, and you'll only get that information of the judges you're going to be asked to vote on in your voter pamphlet. So you won't be reading about judges in Southeast if you live in Anchorage. And
right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the people at the division, at the lieutenant governor's office sort of divide that up. And I also like to mention to people that the voter, the judicial information tends to be towards the back of the voter's pamphlet. Sometimes people tell me, well, I didn't see it. So just keep going. You'll find it. It's in there.
And who writes that information? Does the Judicial Council?
There are two pages on each judge. One page is written by the judge with the information that that judge would like the voters to have about him or her. And then the second page is a summary of the evaluation information that the council puts in.
Okay.
And so maybe we should then move to that question of, well, what? So now we have a situation in which people have been, have gone through this incredible vetting process. In the application process, we've had interviews, we've had information collected, we've had public hearings, the council has voted to send the most qualified applicants, the judge selects this person, voila, black robe, and then life moves on. And then at some point, the public gets to weigh in, and that's the retention process. Can you tell us how often that happens and how it happens?
Sure. And again, back to the founders and the Constitution. So it was really important to them that there be a two-step process with respect to Alaska's judges. First, the merit-based selection, and then second, the retention process, which is where the voters get to weigh in on whether the judge should continue in office. And so the retention cycle begins for a judge after an initial kind of short term in office, just to give them a chance to get their feet underneath them and have a few years on the bench. They have an initial retention election, and then after that, if they're retained, then they have longer terms in office. So that's a little abstract to be more concrete. So a Superior Court judge has their first retention election at the general election that falls more than 3 years after their appointment. And then if they are retained thereafter, they have a retention election every 6 years.
Okay.
And a lesser interval for district court judges and a longer interval for the
appellate judges.
And
exactly.
Is that a matter of statutory or constitutional law?
That is by the I'm blanking on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
So, and the thinking, and someone asked me this at a forum I was speaking at. Why is it so long for the higher up courts and so short for the lower courts? What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've been asked that as well. So recalling that even for a Supreme Court justice, they serve an initial shorter term. So the voters get a chance pretty early on in their career to have a vote on them. But then the thought is, you know, especially for an appellate judge where the decisions are coming out at maybe a pace that's just a little bit slower, and they have some time to develop their written work. And also the appellate process is a collaborative process, so it's not just one judge making decisions, it's a group of judges making decisions. So the thought is that they need a little more time to sort of establish a track record so that they can be evaluated effectively by the Judicial Council and voted on.
And those judges at the appellate level, those are voted on by all the voters.
Everyone in the state.
Okay, because they're
statewide.
They're statewide, and when they rule, it affects everyone, not just the people in that judicial district.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how the council goes about its work to determine whether a judge should be retained or not.
So the council kind of uses the same basic approach that it does on selection. I mean, when you're trying to decide about how a person is doing in their job, you really would want to ask the people who see them do their job. And so that's what the council does. And so whereas in the selection process, we're asking other attorneys, because those are the people who would have had attorneys and judges, because those are the people who would have had the most opportunity to see the performance and the work product of those people. Once you're on the bench, lots more people, you become much more public and lots more people can see your work. So now we're really opening up the process and we're really starting to survey lots of different groups. And so, of course, we go back to the attorneys and we say, well, you thought he or she was going to be an okay judge. What do you think now? We go back to the judges. How's he doing? We survey them in this electronic survey that we use. We also survey police and Department of Corrections probation officers. Those are people who can spend a lot of time in court, would have a good opportunity to observe judges' performance. We also survey jurors. So that's a great group of people who are in the courtroom and really sort of are quite objective. They are not for the prosecution or the defense. They're sort of there watching how the process is happening. So they're a great group. And then also court employees. So the court employees are going to be able to see, you know, how the judge is when he or she is not on the bench, so in the office. Is he or she efficient with his or her files and so forth? So we survey them as well. And also social workers, because many social workers do go to court to testify, and they would have a good opportunity to observe how a judge is doing. So these are a lot of surveys, and the process starts like a year before the retention election, because it takes a long time to gather all this information.
I just want to, if you just heard all these people who get to weigh in on how a judge has performed, it sounds like a giant 360 job review. But the topic today is on Justice Alaska, on Hometown Alaska. We're talking about how judges are selected in Alaska according to our Constitution and how they are retained. And in the studio we have co-host Senior Judge Elaine Andrews and Suzanne DiPietro, who is the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council. So just in case you weighed in, you've gotten your car and you're driving and you're listening to all this about judges, that's why we're talking so much about it. Time to election in November.
Right. And we should remind them that we're recording in September.
Yes.
Something else. Besides surveying people, what other kinds of outside information do you get about what other things do you look at?
So, right, the council is also trying to get some data, some more objective information. And so the council looks at, for a trial judge, how often they're affirmed or reversed on appeal.
What would that tell the council?
Well, that would tell the council whether the judges are making legally correct opinions or not, because the appellate courts will explain if a judge has made an error in their legal reasoning.
Okay. I'm also aware that both in the selection and the retention process, you look at credit history.
Well, that's right, because a person who is not able to manage their personal finances may not be such a good manager of other things like office organization, deadlines, that kind of thing, and that's very important. And also, we don't want judges who are deeply in debt. And that may, you know, compromise them in some way.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
really
there is, as they say, almost no stone left unturned. I mean, it's a remarkable process.
So I was speaking to a retired judge once, and he said going through the selection process was equally as rigorous, was like they turn you upside down and shake you until all the pennies fall out of your pockets.
Oh, man. You would know, Judge Andrews. You've been through this a time or two.
I have been through this. I'm guessing maybe three or four retention elections. As a district court judge, it was every 4 years. Mm-hmm. As a superior court judge, it was every 6 years. And it is a very, very public process. I often explain, you know, it as, you know, if you're applying to be a judge, you're asking for a public report card. I mean, you labor in the area of law that you practice in, and you hope you're doing a good job. Sometimes people will tell you you're doing a good job, but then you put your name out there, and you know, you are going to get a bar poll that is generally speaking anonymous, and you're going to get a report card, and you're not sure. You're hoping it will be a good one, but lawyers have been disappointed, and mm-hmm. and found that they were not as well regarded as they thought they were or hoped they were. And when that happens, an applicant is free to withdraw their name if they want to, or proceed as the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And actually, one of the things that you would look for in the evaluations is the attorneys who say, and there are many attorneys who say, well, I, especially if they've lost, well, I did not agree with the judge's decision. I really, I lost and I didn't like that. But I have to say, he or she treated me fairly, treated me with respect. I understood the procedure. I could explain it to my client, and he or she gave the reasons for the decision. And so I think, and so even though they've lost, they would then say, "But I think this judge is a good judge, because even though I lost, I understand why. I don't agree, but the judge did his or her job."
Those were maybe some of the most important evaluations. You know, it didn't go your way, but you still feel that you were treated fairly.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have a question about historically, have judges not been retained in our state? Does the Judicial Council sometimes not recommend people for retention based on all that evaluating they do?
Sure. I mean, once you hear about how rigorous the selection process is, you could anticipate that probably most of the people who make it through and get on the bench are likely to be able to perform well as judges. And so, in fact, the council recommending against retention is not common, but it has happened, and there have been occasions when judges have been not retained by the voters.
Mm-hmm. And that material, I mean, do they have to get a certain score to get a recommendation? I went on your website and I saw all these reports and scores, and I wonder, how do you make that decision not to retain? Is it a score?
Well, no. So the council takes into account all the ratings on all the surveys, but for the council members, it is really a holistic process of looking at all the information and balancing it. And the bottom line is this judge qualified? Is this judge performing on the criteria that we think are important for a judge, which are the criteria we talked about: legal ability, diligence, integrity, temperament, fairness. And those are the qualities that we evaluated them on for when we were selecting them, and those are the qualities that we're still looking for in a sitting judge. And the standard is, are they still performing on those criteria?
Okay. And I did wonder whether you sometimes have not recommended someone for retention and voters disagree with you, or the reverse of that. You've recommended retention and voters disagree with you.
So it has happened that the council has recommended against retention and the voters have disagreed. Mm-hmm. Yes, that has happened. I'm not remembering the opposite. Mm-hmm. It may have happened, but I'm not remembering a time. There may have been one or two, yeah.
Just curious about mm-hmm. it historically. The other thing I think about is, I have the impression that people don't go all the way down the ballot when they get to the judges. Sometimes they just, this is beyond me, or I don't know how to evaluate them. Is that true historically, that we get low turnout on judge ballots? Do we know?
I think, and maybe you can correct me, Suzanne, but I think that the voting does tend to drop off when you get to judges. So the number of people, for instance, who would vote for a governor are not the same number of people who vote on the judges, that they either have voter fatigue in the voting booth, or they know something about the gubernatorial candidates, but they didn't look at their book on the judges, and they get in there and they just don't know what to do, so they do nothing. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is a surprisingly, at least to me, a surprisingly large percentage of people that just vote no. No, 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 no. Mm. No every time, no on every judge. And that's been kind of a standard feature for, I think, forever.
Yeah, for as long as we've been looking at the data, although it varies a little bit over time. But yeah, the voter fall off, the difference between the percentage of people who vote for governor or some other high profile office versus the judges, there is that. You know, my goal would be I'd like it to be exactly the same.
And the same number of voters who weigh in on the governor judges.
That's what I would like to see. That's my goal. I hope that we can get there.
Yeah. I do think that people might feel I haven't done my homework. I mean, you know, I've been saying there's so much material on your website, but people don't actually have to go all the way back to the Judicial Council website to do their homework. It is in the ballot review that they get before the vote. So
Right. That's
not as intimidating as going through all the juror reports and the,
right. Yeah. You know, and I have to say, staff takes great care to try to summarize all that information in one page in the voter pamphlet. And it's hard to do because it's a lot of information, but we try to jam it in there, and it's a little bit busy. I would sort of hope that people would just take a few seconds to try to look at it. But that's the summary, and you can just go by that.
Right. Do you tend to get calls before an election? Do people call asking for more information? Or
you know, we really don't. I think people who are looking for information do find it. I think it's the other where people aren't really looking or thinking about it. I think that's what it is, that people do forget that the judges are going to be on the ballot.
Right.
And so they sort of forget to look for it until maybe the last minute.
Right. Well, we're going to take a tiny break here. You're listening to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'll be right back. This is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I'm joined in the studio today with co-host, Senior Judge Elaine Andrews, and we have Suzanne DiPietro, who is the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council. We timed this program to be before the election because Alaska voters have the opportunity to weigh in on Alaska judges. And so we've been really talking about how this comes about. It stems from our Alaska Constitution. The founders set it up this way. And we've been talking about the evaluation process. Unfortunately, today we're not able to take phone calls from listeners because this is a pre-recorded show. As I mentioned earlier, we found ourselves recording this the last week in September. And we will air it the day you hear it, which is October 15th, hopefully in time for you to be fired up to understand the ballot and understand your right to vote for judges. So back to the studio here, what would we like to, we've really covered a lot of ground, but right. what do we want to cover?
Well, I think for me, it's, once again, I'm always a little bit surprised by the fact that either people don't know about our system or that they're new to the state and they're used to seeing billboards that say, vote for Judge Joe Schmo, tough on crime, vote for, judge. I mean, there's, there's campaigning and there's electioneering. And of course, with campaigning and electioneering, there's money that needs to be gathered for that. And in some states, judges are Republican or Democrat or independent or libertarian or, whatever the case may be. And, part of the reason I think that people don't pay attention to some extent is because we don't have all of that. We don't have, we have a completely transparent system, but we don't have a system that kind of, makes that, you're not going to see any TV ads. You're not going to see any billboards. You're not going to see any yard signs. People aren't going to be knocking on your door asking for donations to elect Judge so-and-so. And from my way of thinking, that's a good thing because it really takes the politics out of it. It's a huge privilege to be a judge. It's a huge responsibility, and it's to be able to do the job without all of that extraneous stuff is I think really results in a judiciary that Alaska can be proud of. But the process does take informed and interested voters because really the public is involved. And, in many ways, the retention process is people judging the judges. And, you hope that the public acts in the way you would hope the judges would act, which is informed, find out the information, evaluate the information. You hope that people don't ignore the information. They don't shoot from the hip. They don't, make rash decisions. But they have the right and the privilege of the vote. And that's, I think, the beauty and the genius of this system. It's merit-based, but it's public participation. And so That's something that is requires, I think, some work on the part of citizens to actually try and understand, you know, what this is about. And you, Suzanne, talked about the, you know, in the back of the voter pamphlet, you know, there's a little chart. I'm familiar with these little charts, and they'll say things, you know, they'll have the four or five categories. And then, I mean, you don't get an A or a B or a C or a D and an F, but you do get a numerical score. And, you know, you get a 4.2 in this, and you get a 3.8 in that, or a, you know, I mean, you can see, and you can compare judge to judge in the back. It's, you know, if you're
I'm curious, you know, you've been a judge, you've gone through, I think you said earlier, maybe four retention, you're retired now as a judge, but would you look at that and consider that as your job review? I mean, it's the fine grain details of how you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, I would get that information, I would pour over it, and what the judges, at least, I don't think they get them quite the way that now that they used to, but people can make comments on the bar poll. And so I think they now kind of sanitize them and group them. But when I was up for retention, you would get, shall we just say, the raw data by anonymous raters. And, you know, some of it was, you'd get a nice comment and you think, oh, yes, isn't
I'm
that
doing
marvelous?
A good
I'm
job.
Doing just a great job. And then the next line down would be someone saying, you know, terrible. I mean, literally, you would get a comment that says, you know, excellent, you know, insightful regarding custody matters with children. And the next line would be worst judge ever to decide custody cases. I mean, so you would, and I think a judge that's sort of thoughtful and interested in improving their performance would not reject out of hand the negativity. They would try and see if there's a cluster of concerns and try and see if there's something they can do to improve their performance. So you look at that. You really do. I mean, it's
pattern of critique. You know, I wonder, Suzanne, when a case has gone through and a decision has been made right then, people are excited about it. Do people contact the Judicial Council then to say, "Great job," or "I don't like that job," or do you get a lot of feedback as cases go through the system?
So yeah, we do occasionally. I wouldn't say all the time, but every once in a while, there'll be something that's in the news or on social media, and I'll get emails and/or phone calls. And of course, you know, that is input from the public. One thing I haven't talked too much about is on the retention, the evaluation of judges. The council holds a statewide public hearing where people can call in and testify from the LIO offices, the Legislative Information offices, and also a member of the public can send information about their experience with a judge anytime, and we will put that in the judge's file. And I tell them this will be in the judge's file for the council members to review when the evaluation time comes around. So that's what I do.
So there's another direct way that the public can participate. If they've got an opinion, they can send it to the Judicial Council. It goes in a judge's file.
Absolutely, okay. And they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Yeah. So it's it really is a it's a complex system, but there's just something to me that's very I just think it's sort of a genius solution because it kind of threads that line between, you know, politics, merit, public participation, accountability, it's a system that, you know, we have, and besides the Judicial Council, of course, there is the Judicial Conduct Commission, which has its own.
Oh, that's true. We did not talk about that.
That, yeah. That's another piece where if a judge actually, you know, does something that is in violation of the judge's ethical duties, there is a whole other group of citizens and lawyers who then review, who judge the judges in that regard. So I think that, you know, judges perform an important public function and they are answerable and, you know, there's a lot of scrutiny. It's a tough job and you're making important decisions and you need to be aware of that and the public has the right to be heard on that.
Here's a question for you, Elaine. As a judge, if you know you made a mistake, obviously, you try not to make a mistake. You weigh it before you make your decision. But there must be some times when a judge says, "I made my best decision, but boy, now I'm not so sure." I mean, what's the process for a judge?
Well, I judges make literally hundreds of decisions every day. And so I can only speak to my matrix, because when you're making decisions, you've got to be prepared. You have to have done your homework. You do the best job you can by beginning with preparation, being thoughtful when you make the decision, and then you need to move on. And for me, my matrix was, if I was thinking about a decision that I had made 5 or 10 days and it was keeping me awake at night, whether or not the lawyers had moved for reconsideration, I would, on my own motion, set the matter on for reconsideration. Mm. If that decision did not sit well with me and it was a decision that I could reconsider, not all decisions can be reconsidered, but if I could reconsider it, I would do that. Now, I mean, I didn't do that very often because, consistency and reliability is something you're looking for in a judge as well. So, you know, it happened in my career several times, but, you know, I had 20 plus years. So it's not something that you did every week or every month or necessarily even every year. But if I really sort of examined my conscience and decided I'd made the wrong decision, I did something about it.
Do judges talk to each other? I mean, is that one place judges? Because it sounds like that those first years on the bench can be a learning time for a judge. So are there opportunities for judges to share in the accumulated wisdom of other judges?
Yes. We have it's a collegial group. And so, yes, I mean, younger judges tend to talk to older judges and talk to each other about, you know, considerations and things to think about, and new judges get mentor judges to help them navigate the job of being a judge. It has a substantive content to it. It has a communications content to it. It has an emotional content to it. So, in more recent years, we've had mentor judges, which I think is a huge improvement because it is a very isolated and isolating job. You really do not have the kind of freedom and social connection that you used to have before you were a judge.
Well, that's true because you have to be somewhat isolated and insulated. I mean,
yes.
You have to be your own person. And so socially, that has an impact on you socially, too.
Oh, yes. I mean, you can no longer, I mean, the good news, bad news, if someone's asking you for a political donation, you simply say, no can do. You can't attend political fundraisers. You can't make political contributions. You can't socialize sometimes with some of your friends because you've got matters pending. And so, you know, it might be something where you can't have lunch with a friend for a couple of years because they're involved in some kind of a case that you...
A legal matter.
A legal matter, and so you... And it's a very respectful legal community. Everyone understands the walls that have to be... So no lawyer would come up to a judge saying, how about that case last week? What do you think? I mean, no lawyer would do that and no judge would stand for it because everyone understands those things are forbidden.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think. What haven't we covered? Because we have covered a lot, but this is our one chance for voters to get kind of revved up and knowledgeable about their opportunity to vote, to retain judges. So I'm just trying to think. The election is November 6th. You won't see all 15 judges. That was something I said. But actually, in South Central Hill, there will be 9 judges on the ballot for retention.
And we have... No statewide judges, or we do.
No statewide judges.
No statewide judges. And this is sort of interesting because I think the last general election, there must have been 40.
Yeah, it really varies. The number of judges varies. Last time we had so many judges on the ballot, it's just sort of, it's a coincidence of when they were appointed and when the general election falls. So, it's a manageable number this time.
Well, good for you guys.
And good for the voters, too.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Less that they have to plow through, if you say.
And what has been the turnover in terms of judicial selection? We have had, I am going to say, a good 20 or 30% of our judges have turned over in
last, say, 2 to 3 years, around a quarter, roughly, of the judges have retired or left the bench, and so have needed to be replaced with the judicial selection process in the Constitution. And so there, it is a big time of change, and we've got some newer judges on the bench who are coming up for retention elections and being evaluated. And, you know, I might just add, when Judge Andrews was talking about some of the ethical constraints on judges, that they can't necessarily socialize or talk about certain things in the community, that the retention evaluation process that the council does is sometimes the only sort of candid feedback, or some of the only really candid feedback that a judge will get on their performance. And so it's very it's important for them, for their self-improvement. We talk a lot about how the retention information, the evaluation information, can be used by the voters, but it's also used by the judges. And the judges will take, as Judge Andrews said, you know, even look at those negative comments, and they typically don't reject them as hurtful. They'll sort of try them on, you know, try it on. Does it fit?
Mm-hmm. Could this be right?
Could this be right? Is there something here? Are there a series of these comments? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then certainly can and do make adjustments in the way they do their job.
Mm-hmm. Can a judge just decide not to run for retention just because they tried this job on and maybe for many reasons they've decided this doesn't fit who I am, so they just don't run? Is that, or do they inform the judicial council, or what, how does that happen?
That's right. And sometimes judges, sometimes actually a retention election approaching will be a time for self-reflection for someone who's been a judge mm-hmm. for a while, perhaps, and might decide, wow, this is a really hard job. I might, you know, I've been doing it for a while now. I'm a little tired. Maybe I will retire or not stand for retention and then move on to the next phase of my life.
Mm-hmm. So if a judge doesn't stand for retention, what happens after?
So if a judge doesn't stand for retention, then 90 days after the election day, the seat becomes vacant and the judicial council starts that selection process all over again.
Okay, so if you decide not to run for retention, you have 90 days, and then mm-hmm. and then you're done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Exactly.
Right. And is there a retirement age for judges? A mandatory retirement age?
There is.
Oh, okay. What is it?
It seems like it's so young. It's just 70.
Oh, the 70 is the new 50, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Right. Yes, and we've had numbers of judges who have reached mandatory retirement mm-hmm. age.
Who have, some of whom would have continued if they could have, but of course that is one thing that, you know, the Constitution was written, you know, back in the 50s, and 70 probably seemed like a really old age.
So it would take a constitutional amendment to change that? I don't know.
I think it's in the Constitution.
It's judges can continue to serve pro tem, and that what that means is they can sit as a temporary judge, sort of like a substitute teacher,
kind of a helpful fill-in.
Yeah. Yes. And they can do that after 70, but they also go through an evaluation, though. Even the judges who serve pro tem are evaluated. So
yeah. Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I've often wanted to invite retired judges on the show just to let their hair down, talk about what that career was like, because I think it would be fun. Anyway, we are out of time, as you hear from the music. I'd like to thank co-host and Senior Judge Elaine Andrews and our guest Suzanne DiPietro, Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council. We'd like to remind all listeners that it is important to vote on November 6th. I'll be back as your host on Hometown Alaska next Monday when we talk with three young people in Anchorage, ages 10 and 11, about their dreams. They are part of a cultural project here in Anchorage called Eyes Closed. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.